So Boker to everybody. It's everybody's doing well, but yes, it is. What can I tell you? Okay, we'll talk about I don't know what. Okay, we'll just do a few minutes to, as I'm sure everybody knows, especially those who didn't eat breakfast. It's Asar B'Tevet, and of course, it's a little bit unusual. This is according to our calendar today. This, of course, is the only fast day that can fall on a Friday. And of course, I have my whatever. I think the fast should end a lot earlier than everybody ends the fast, but that's nobody cares what I say. But I'll just explain what I mean very, very, very briefly. We'll spend a couple of minutes talking about Ezra and sort of what the fast day is about. But I do want to show you something very interesting. This is a Mishnah in Masechet Tanit. Masechet Tanit, of course, the tractate of fasting, and that we mentioned on various, you know, other occasions. It doesn't talk about so much about our fast days. It talks about rain fast days. When it didn't rain, most fast days were done because it didn't rain in Israel. Israel's dependent on rain, and before they had all this water technology, we were really dependent on rain. Baruch Hashem, today Israel doesn't really, I mean, we still need rain, but nowhere near the way it once was, because Israel desalinates water. They're the water superpower of the world, and we basically, just like by Chava, we've sort of outsmarted God, if I can use such an expression, where, you know, God says, you know, you'll have childbirth and pain. And yeah, I guess it's still whatever, as a man, I can't talk, but it's still a little, but it's much less painful. We have methodologies to make birth much, much painful. And the same way it says in the Torah, it's you don't get rain in Israel. It's Vayayim Shamoah. Only if you listen to God. You can't have natural water. I'm going to do it. And we said, no, we're going to create our own water. And that's a fine Jewish practice. God can give sort of a quote unquote a negative prophecy, and we can try to defeat it, if I can use that terminology. But that's most of Masechet Tanit was about the fast days, because it didn't rain. And there was a whole schedule. Three fasts, three more fasts, seven fasts. The first fasts were only done by Torah scholars, etc. Yes, I agree rain is essential, but it's not like life and death the way it once was in Mishneh time, because thank God of the technology it has. So that's most of Masechet Tanit. It's the first two chapters. So I'm just going to show you, just take a quick look. Let me just share my screen here. Okay, so the Mishnah says like this. This is a Mishnah in Tanit. So this Mishnah says as follows. So when you're making, they used to fast Mondays and Thursdays. We know Mondays and Thursdays are special days, long tachanun, etc. So we're not supposed to have a fast if the Monday coming up is Rosh Chodesh, or you don't fast. You don't fast on Hanukkah and Purim. You're not allowed to fast on those days. But let's say you're in a cycle of seven fasts, and the third Monday is Rosh Chodesh. Okay. You fast. You don't not do the fast because one of the days is going to be a Monday or Thursday, but you can't start on a day that you're not supposed to fast. Rameir says, Afapi Shamar Rabban Gamliel aim up seeking. Even though Rabban Gamliel said you fast, you're going to fast on Rosh Chodesh. Then when normally you wouldn't fast, but if it's part of the cycle to fast for rain, mo dehaya shei mashlim, but you can't fast all day. You have to, it's still Rosh Chodesh. So you fast till 4 o'clock in the afternoon, whatever. You have to, he doesn't say exactly till when, but you cannot complete the fast. V'chein tisha b'av shechol liyot be'erev Shabbat. When Tisha B'av falls on Friday, that hasn't happened in, I don't know, at least 1,600 years since we have a fixed calendar. Our calendar is set up in such a way that we do not Tisha B'Av never falls on a Friday. The only fast day that can fall on a Friday is Asar B'Tevet. No other fast day can ever fall on a Friday. The only fast day that can fall, no, that's not true. Many fast days can fall on Shabbos. Tisha B'Av, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, and Tzom Gedalia can all happen on Shabbos. We just don't fast on Shabbos. We push it off till Sunday. And same thing, Tanit Esther. I think, right? Yud Dalet Adar this year, no, Yud Dalet Adar is never on a Shabbos. This year it's also on a Friday. When the Asar B'Tevet's on a Friday, Purim's on a Friday, and Pesach is Saturday night. They all go together. You know, Pesach's on Saturday night. But the Mishnah has this amazing idea. Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av's on a Friday. You're not supposed to fast all day. You have to end the fast early. So just to be fair, I mean, so that's the, what the Mishnah says. If you take a look at the Partanura, you can see it here. I don't know why it's in English, but maybe that's better because I don't know. So the Mishnah says, I can't read this in English. I don't know why it's doing that. I don't know. It changed here how it sets it up, but okay. Translation. Forget it. Source. Okay, yeah. Kagon bizman shayu beitin kovim al pi hariyah. When the beitin used to establish the new month based on the setting of the moon. So any day, any holiday can fall on any day of the month. There was no set calendar. Mipnei kvod ha-shabbat. You have to eat close to samuch, often has a connotation of a half an hour before. The Mishnah says, Erve Psachim, on Erev Pesach, samuch lemincha. Before, near mincha time, you can't eat. You want to be hungry for the Pesach Seder. So the commentaries explain, samuch means half an hour. I don't know if samuch in every situation has to mean a half an hour. That's, of course, a rounded number. There's no, but the idea, you would eat Erev Tisha B'Av, let's say sunsets at 9 o'clock. So you'd eat at 8:30 when Tisha B'Av fell on a Friday. If Nekvot HaShabbat, it's not appropriate to enter Shabbat when you're hungry. Shelo Yikanesh LeShabbat Keshu Ra'ev. You shouldn't enter Shabbos when you're hungry. That's not, it's not good. You want to, you're not supposed to eat too much on Friday either. You shouldn't be full, but you shouldn't be hungry. So the Bartanur just says, Ein halacha k'Rav Meir, but we don't follow this view. We do the same thing when Tisha B'Av falls on Friday. So I guess that's the same thing they do on Asar B'Tevet, but there is, there you see already room. I mean, the question I really have that is Tisha B'Av is one thing, but Asar B'Tevet is only a minhag. I don't know if people understand, I mean, realize this, right? Fasting today and Shiva Sarv Thomas is a minhag. What do you mean it's a minhag? In other words, okay, it's a minhag, we all do. It's like, you're supposed to do it. But it has a much lower status. And that's the only reason we only began the fast this morning. I don't know how many people got up early for breakfast. Even though it's an early fast, I didn't do that. I just ate before I went to bed at a bowl of cereal. But someday, if you want to get up at 6, the fast didn't start here until 6:39, a little later than in New York. You can get up at 6:15 and eat. But what? That doesn't make any sense. It's a sarbatavit. Started last night. So since the Gemara says when basically without getting to all the details, Ratzu Mitanim, Ratzuay Mitanim. That's how the Mishnah says it. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah. You want to fast? Ratzu Mitanim. When there's not total persecution of the Jews, like during the time of the Holocaust, you'd have to fast from last night on Asar B'Tevet. But when there's peace, true peace, you don't fast at all. These fast days are obliterated. And that's what we always say, the prophecy of Zechariah, that the fast, Soma Revi'i, Soma Chamishi, Soma Shvi'i, Soma Asiri, the four fasts relating to the destruction of the temple, Asar B'Tevet, Shiva Asar B'Tamuz, Tisha B'Av, and Soma Gedalia, they all relate to destruction and exile. You L'Sasona L'Simcha, one day will be days of joy, happiness and rejoicing. So the Gemara says, if you're living in peace, however you define that, you don't have to fast at all on Tisha B'Av either. If you're living in real persecution of the Jewish people, then all the fast days have to start at night before. And if you're living it's not peace, the world's nuts, but you can't say there's active persecution. We basically, live night Baruch Hashem. This is probably the best time, despite everything, probably the best time to be alive as a Jew, pretty much in history. You know, the freedoms we have and the wealth and the, everything. And the, it's amazing, many things. And the state of Israel, despite all the difficulties, but it's far from ideal. So then the Gemara says, Ratzu Mitanim, Ratzu Imin. If you want to fast, you fast. If you don't want to fast, you don't have to fast. And then the Gemara says Tisha B'Av is different. Tisha B'Av is already a rabbinic law because huch belut sarot. Many terrible things happen. Tisha B'Av is, we all know that, of course. And that's why we fast the night before. Now, so in theory, based on that Gemara alone, you don't really have to, what do you mean you want to, you don't want to fast? Who wants to fast? So I'm going to be Ratzuay Mitanim. So it's like, kind of like Mariv, the Jewish people have taken it upon themselves to agree to fast, but it's only a minhag, and therefore you're always much more lenient on a minhag. Like, somebody asked me how bad does their headache have to be that they can eat? So I said, not very bad. Not very bad at all. And I said, that's even before I get to Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's grandfather, was famously lean. Would famously tell people to eat on Yom Kippur. You know, that anybody would go, you know, they're not feeling well, this, that. So Rav Chaim would tell them, go eat on Yom Kippur. And people complained, why are you so lenient about Yom Kippur? It's like so important. So, of course, Rav Chaim gave his famous, beautiful line, I'm not strict, I'm not lenient on Yom Kippur, I'm machmir on Pikuach Nefesh. I'm very strict when it comes to saving a life, right? Every stringency has a leniency, and every lenient, you know, it's a balance. You can't, maybe I'm strict. So that's the problem. If you want to be strict on Asar B'Tevet, then you're lenient on Kavod Shabbos. So even if you do fast all day, but the fast day should probably, I don't want to get into a little discussion, but the fast day should you're asking me, but nobody asked me. I'm not the posting here, but I really don't understand. Honestly, I don't understand why the fast doesn't end at sunset as opposed to nightfall. In other words, because already in the Talmud, like the Ramban, many Rishonim say, when is the fast end? So we all know Friday, we begin Shabbos early and we end late. Well, why is it 25 hours? We're not exactly sure if the day starts at sunset or nightfall, right? And Rabbeinu Tam, you know, people who are strict on Rabbeinu Tam, so they end Shabbos 72 minutes, let's say, after sunset. Well, I don't know. You know that, of course, going to Rabbeinu Tam, you can drive a car 57 and a half minutes. The last three quarters of a meal, the last 13 and a half minutes is the Rabbeinu Tam says, is Bein HaShemashot, we're not sure, it's twilight, but up to 57 minutes after sunset, you can drive a car on Friday. Because it's not that Rabbeinu Tam is strict. Rabbeinu Tam just has a different definition of when the day starts. So Rabbeinu Tam says the day starts much later. In other words, the day starts really at nightfall. And that used to be the followed opinion. That's the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch writes, you should follow Rabbeinu Tam. You start Shabbos much later and end much later. We all don't do that. When the Vilna Gaon has this expression, Hachush Machish. It's such a beautiful expression. The Vilna Gaon walked, he says, what do you mean? Walk outside 45 minutes after sunset. It's pitch black. Don't tell me it's still the day, because the Gemara, it's based on how you understand a Gemara. And the Vilna Gaon is there saying, well, I don't, you know, just look outside. You can't interpret the Gemara like this. And so that's why it's, I think, my understanding was there were Hasidim in New York who used to drive their cars 40 minutes after sunset, when we would consider that totally Shabbos. And I think it doesn't happen, but that's my answer. The Hasidim held like Rabbeinu Tam through and through. Through and through, and that's what I was talking to somebody yesterday. I was going through this whole thing with him, explaining, you know, why, what, you know. So he said to me, oh, that's the heter. I said, what heter? He said, I heard that if you land on a plane on Friday, your plane is late, and it's like 10 minutes after sunset, you can still get in the car. So what, I'm not saying yes or no. He's saying, okay, in other words, that's right. They're relying, according to Rabbeinu Tam, if your plane lands 10 minutes after sunset, you can actually get in the taxi. You can even drive the car yourself. So we wouldn't normally do that. Maybe get into a taxi. He said, you can, when can you rely on Rabbeinu Tam to be lenient? That's not for now, but just to be aware of the day schedule. So, but according to many opinions, a fast day, so we're strict. We begin Shabbos before sunset, but we end after nightfall. That's very nice. That's the proper approach, of course. The question is, that's nice, that's good on Shabbos, that's good in Kippur. Asar B'Tevet, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, you have to worry about that. So when I was in YU, people who know this know, in Rav Schachter's Kollel, we used to end the fast like 20 minutes after sunset on Tzom Gedalia, earlier than any shul will end it. Because whatever, he failed it. It's a minhag, you don't have to be so strict, not Shabbos. So, but some opinions, even at Shkia, that many opinions say you can end, a fast ends at sunset. That's the next day. So normally we don't do that, but if it's only a minute, so even on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, we're not going to do that. But if it's Friday, then maybe there's room to do that. Again, it's just how basically in halacha, you know, every Like I said, every chumrah has a kula, and every kula has a chumrah. It's always a balance. You can't just look one thing; you have to look how it impacts. So I don't understand. Honestly, I really don't understand why nobody says. I guess maybe I do understand. So he says, okay, because of Sarbat Tevis on a Friday, we're going to rely on those opinion that every year the fast ends, not even it's not on a Friday. Many great Rishonim held the fast should always end at Shkia. And even if we don't follow Rav Meir's opinion that when Tisha B'Av fell on Friday, they didn't fast all day, there's what we say, Amal Yismoch. But I think the problem is we people are always, they're afraid if they do that, what's going to happen next year when it's not on a Friday? And this and that, there's always a fear about public reaction. And that's why when you read books in English, they always give you the most strict opinion. Never Puskin, a Shaila, from the internet, this always ask a rabbi, because as is well known, Koach de Hatera Adif, the power of being lenient is great. Most of the great Puskim in Jewish history, not so much in our generation, we live in a crazy generation, but it used to be the role of Posek was to be lenient, to make life easier. Or as Rav Shechter used to tell us all the time, that we begin with the premise that everything is allowed. Everything is allowed, unless the Torah says it's not allowed. Today, people have the attitude, everything is not allowed, unless you found a heter to do it. That's not classic Judaism. Classic Judaism, the Torah, that's what the Gemara says, at 120, this is in the Yerushalmi, the Bavli has six questions God is going to ask you. The Yerushalmi adds a seventh question, did you enjoy all the benefits of this world? I created a beautiful world. I think that's what Shinshu Rafael Hirsch answered when they said, when he took, went on a school trip to the Swiss Alps. You know, he took the students in Frankfurt, the Swiss, so wasting time away from learning Torah to go to the Swiss Alps. Maravu Masach Hashem, how beautiful. You're going to ask me, did you enjoy this world? God created a beautiful world. You have to get benefit from it. So, anyways, but I understand why people don't, and this is, so I'm just sort of, you know, discussing why I think it's very interesting when the Sarbat Tevis on a Friday, there's room to make Kiddush a little earlier. Okay, do whatever your local rabbi says and don't listen to me. This is just for learning purposes. All right, one other thing quickly, and then a couple other minutes, if you don't mind, I'll let you do mine, on a Sarbat Tevis. So why everybody, okay, why are we fasting today?
The siege.
Right, so that's the classic reason. They put a siege on Jerusalem, I guess 587 BCE, and then it took them, then when were the walls broken? The siege on Jerusalem was on a Sarbat Tevet. When were the walls broken?
Two and a half years later.
I'm sorry, when?
Shiva.
Right, I said it's a true question. You should have, that was the hint that that's incorrect. Why is that incorrect? Shiva Sabatam was the second temple, is the Romans. The first temple is the ninth of Tammuz. And that's why in Zechariah it says the fast of the fifth month, the fourth month. It doesn't really matter what day. That's how we assume. You have to fast in the ninth month. Really, as I'm sure people have heard before, most of the destruction temple happened on the 10th of Av, not on the 9th of Av. There are all kinds of reasons why you're doing 9th of Av. Really, the fast, the actual day is important. That's what it says in Zechariah. It's Soma Revi'i, Soma Chamishi, the fast of the fourth month. So the rabbis felt it's too much. The ninth of Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz, the ninth of Av. We don't want to impose too many fast days. So they put the fast on Shiva Sarbat Tevet. But in the first temple, Sarbat Tevet is the first temple. The first temple, the Babylonians put a siege. They breached the walls on the ninth of Tammuz, and then they destroyed the temple on the ninth of Av. Okay, so that's the classic reason we fast. What's the less classic reason we fast? What's the second reason we fast? Who said slichas this morning? I'm asking an unfair question. Did anybody say slichas this morning? I shouldn't even ask. Thank you, Sima. Okay. I shouldn't even ask. You know, we've discussed this. On our trips, we've discussed this, like, with Mark Shapiro. I don't want to ask anybody what they do. It's none of my business. But I know in especially like in Borapar, I shouldn't use that term, but in from circles, yeshiva circles, most women don't fast on these fast days. That's what I think in the modern Orthodox community, they do fast much more, but that's not what they do. It's just, they don't fast. That's, and somebody can confirm that if I'm right or wrong, but I know from many sources, and I personally seen it with my own eyes, and from other people that even the men don't necessarily fast after after Chatzot. It's like a, it's another guy. And I guess it's sort of what I said before. It's really a minhag. And I said, you don't have to have, such a bad headache. Rav Chaim on Yom Kippur was lenient on Pikuach Nefesh. So if it's a Sar B'Tevet, you're allowed to break your fast. You have a Mechush Ba'alma, we call it. Mechush Ba'alma means you have a headache. In Halacha, there are three categories of sickness. There's a person, Chole Sheyeshpo
Sakana.
Sakana. A person who's deathly ill, it's very serious. So, of course, we break everything. Yom Kippur, Shabbos, obviously. Then we have a chola she'ein bo sakana. A sick person who's not in danger of dying, but he's bedridden. That's how the poskim define it. You're bedridden, you have a bad flu, and you can't get out of bed. You feel really lousy, but you're not gonna die. It's a, you'll be up some tea in bed. You'll rest. You'll try to read a little bit. You'll sleep extra. So that's the, then you can break rabbinic laws for a chole she'ein bo sakana. You can fast, you can technically, on Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to eat if you're a chole she'ein bo sakana. Yom Kippur, you have to be a chole who's in danger. And then you have a third category, it's called the mechush ba'alma. Yeah, but you don't feel well, you're functioning, you go to work, you do everything, but you know, your body doesn't, you have a bad headache, you take Tylenol. So mechush ba'alma, you're allowed to violate minhagim. So that's it for Shiva's Sarvadev. You have a Mechush Balma. You can fast. So how you define it? Different people will probably define Mechush Balma differently. I grew up Baruch Hashem. I don't know. I come from the world. I don't want to talk, but Baruch Hashem, as far as I know, I've never missed a fast day. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm an easier faster, but there are circles where they're much more lenient. I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's very interesting. Okay. But, why would I say that? So what's the second reason? I think that's what it says. What's the second
Hashem
reason?
Hashem decides on this day, whether there'll be another Beis HaMikdash or not, decides we're judged to see if there will be another, the Churban will remain or will have a Beis HaMikdash.
I've never heard that before. Do you have a source for that? I've never heard that. Thank you.
I've read it, but I don't remember where. But okay. That's why they said Asara B'Teves is such an important fast.
No, Asar B'Tevet in modern times has become a little important because it's the fast that the Israeli Rabbanut defined for people who don't know when people died in the Holocaust. It's the Yortzeit of the people who don't know. I don't know how widely it's observed. I really don't know. And I don't hear about it in America, North America. People talk about it much. And when I was younger, I think I heard it more. But I think Asar B'Tevet is the day that people who don't know, unfortunately, when their relatives were killed in the Holocaust, that's the day they observe the Yortzeit. They say Kaddish. So maybe, but I've never heard this idea that's when God is deciding.
I got a message today. It's from the Chassam Sofer, Toras Moshe Vayikra.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
That's his commentary on the Chumash.
Oh, the Chatham Sofer's commentary on Vayikra. Right. I thought it was some organization.
He says, yeah, that's it. It's considered, I think the Avudraham says that if it would fall on
yes.
Shabbos,
the Avudraham, famous. Yeah. Thank you, Yocheved. The Avudraham, who we've often quoted because he wrote the first major commentary on the Siddur, David Avudraham in Spain, 14th century, we've often quoted him. So he has a famous comment that if Asar B'Tevet would fall on Friday, on Shabbos, you would fast on Shabbos because it says, Be'etzam HaYom HaZeh, like it does on Yom Kippur in Yechezkel. I think he uses the same language. Most Rishonim assume that's incorrect. It became famous. Somehow, you know, certain things become, the Avudraham says, if Asar B'Tevet would fall on Shabbos, it never does. So we don't have to deal with the issue. But I think most people don't agree with that. In other words, there's no halakhic source in the Gemara. Some person in the 14th century comes up with this nice idea. It's a nice chiddush, but it's no stronger than my chiddush that you should break the fast at sunset. You know, like so I don't know, but yes, the Avudraham does say that. But I don't know if it's okay. That's interesting.
It's all connected. Also connected to Ezra.
Ah, very good. So that's Ezra. What about Ezra?
I think Ezra died around here.
Yeah, so that was in the sleep this morning, that Ezra died on the 9th.
And I think also that the Targum Shivim was around this
excellent.
Time.
Excellent. Okay, very good. So let's take a very quick look and see this. Okay, excellent. Thank you, Debbie. Okay, let's take a quick look at the Stephas. I know I can't believe Koren published it so not nicely. What I mean not nicely, in other words, you can't really see it properly. Like it doesn't do the rhyme well. But okay. If they would do it properly, this is a beautiful, beautiful. The Piyutim Slichas are really so beautifully written. This is an alphabetical acrostic that rhymes, but you can't see it so much. Eskara Matsuk, I remember the distress that happened to me. Bishalosh, that's the bait. Makot Hikani, Bachodesha, three plagues hit me this month. Here's the Gimel, Gidani, Hanani, Yachani, Achata, Halani. Then Dalit, Yachani, Bishmona, Bos, Smolit, Yemani. So I was distressed, all terrible things. On the eighth, small, to the right and to the left, you know, I know where to go, like Bilam's donkey, you know. Halo shloshtam kavati tanit. So there was this idea to fast for 3 days. In the time, why? Melech Yavani, Nasti lichtov dat Yavanit, because this Septuagint, this is the origins, right, that we think, that the king of Greece forced me to write the Torah into Greece. We have to fast. We have to have a long fast for that, 3 days. We'll get there in a second. On the ninth, here is the Zion, right? On the ninth, I'm with sackcloth, chashach, they have darkness, the chet, from my beautiful coat was taken away. Why? Because who? Ezra Hasofer, because Ezra was taken away. Ezra died. And Yom Asiri, Siva Ben, again, we're up to Yud. It's the alphabet acrostic. It rhymes. On the 10th day, Ben Buzi is Yecheskel. Hachazel. Ktav lecha b'sefer machazel. Right. Lizikron af. Right. At Etzem. That's what I was talking about. This day, that's where they get this notion that it's even on Shabbos. Okay, so it's a whole thing. So these are the three things that apparently happened on that. The Torah was translated into Greek. Ezra died, and of course the siege of Jerusalem. I really don't want to spend the whole year on this, but well, we'll see. How often does a Sarva David fall on Friday? My understanding is not happening again for another 10 years. So, okay, I guess we can spend a few more minutes like this. So first of all, Schneer Lyman has a beautiful article on the fast of the ninth of Tevet. The Shulchan Aruch I don't have it there on the screen. I think it's Siman 580, if I'm not mistaken. Of all the fast days, what they were accustomed to fast, I don't think anybody fasts on these days. There are 25 fast days more. This is the Miriam died, all different minhagim to fast. And then he quotes the fast, Pisha, the night of Tevet, there's a custom to fast. Lo yadanu mahi, we don't know why we fast. We don't know why we fast. Now, whenever, it's like when Rashi says, Aim Rivka Yaakov or Rachel, when Yaakov is running away, it's refers to Rivka as the mother of Yaakov and Esav. So Rashi says, I don't know what this is teaching us. That's, he didn't have to say anything, but he wanted to show his ignorance, right? Rashi say, I don't know what this means. Obviously, he's telling you there's a problem here. I have no idea why in the world is the Torah telling us it, but I don't know what the answer is. I have no idea. And of course, that's going to spur other people. So the Shogun said, I don't know why we fast on the ninth of Tevet, but we do. And, so here, I'll show you just quickly. Let me share if any of you want to read it. I'm sure many of you, I hope, have heard of Schneer Lyman. He's really one of the top scholars in the world, the tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he knows everything about everything. So the scroll of the fast, you can look it up. Go in the Lyman Library. If you type in Google the Lyman Library, and then you go to his collections, and you'll see a lot of his articles. So the Hebrew scroll, Megillat Tanit, okay, whole thing, and then he has a whole discussion, okay, what Megillat Tanit is, and then he gets to the problem of the ninth of eight. Of all the enigmas, none is more enigmatic than its formulation. Freshgrad, the ninth of Tevet, the text in his earliest formulation reads, Tishava lo katvu rabbeinu amahu. Our rabbis didn't tell us why we have to fast. Okay, anyway, so that thing. But I just want to mention two things about this. So first of all, what does Art Scroll do with this Gemara about the Greeks? What do we do about this? Okay, what do you mean? That they made a fast day because they translated the Torah into Greek. So what happens when you translate the Torah into English? You have to find Greece. Greek, at least, is the Talmud says Greek is a beautiful language. You're Yotze, many mitzvot, you can be Yotze in Greek, not in other language. Call us Sfarim, except you can write in Greek. The Gemara elevates Greek. Yapet Elohim, the beauty of Yapet. English, we don't make it. So how can you learn Torah in English? So, Daka, that's our Chumra Kula side again. Everything in life is not, you know what? You're right. We should have a fast day that people need Art Scroll or Koran. I don't want to pick on Art Scroll. We can pick a fast day that people can't learn. People can go to yeshiva for 10 years and can't learn Gemara in the original. We should have a fast day for that. And it's terrible. I teach in chat, the Community Hebrew Academy of Toronto, and most of the kids, I don't know most, many kids, I teach in English. You have to sort of the two divisions, the Hebrew division totally and the English, and more, even kids who could be in Hebrew knew if English is available, that's the problem. You offer English. On the other hand, in the time, and I know people, I know someone once complained to me bitterly, they could not get into chat. They moved from out of town and their Hebrew wasn't good enough and said, we're sorry. We teach everything in Hebrew. Tova, when you went to chat, everything hayav ivrit, right? Right, Tova? Everything was in Hebrew.
Yes, pretty much, yeah.
And how many kids were in your class? 40, 50 in your grade?
60.
Today, 400 kids are in grade 9 in a grade. That's your choice. Do you want 60 kids in Hebrew? That's not the only factor, but you understand. Or 400 kids in English. So obviously, it's great that people can learn Torah in English. And there are hundreds of thousands of people learning Daf Yomi who would not be learning Daf Yomi if they wasn't for Art Scroll. That's for sure. Art Scroll was what got Daf Yomi. So it's wonderful, but it's tragic at the same time. Tragic, that's a harsh word. But we know translation, no translate, you can never translate something properly. So that's just one thing yes, we need translations, but we should once a year fast that we have to translate, and then the rest of the year use the translation. That's just important to point out. Now, Ezra, and then we'll stop here. Ezra dying. So that's a big question. It doesn't appear in the Slichot. It says that's why we fast. Other sources, you read Professor Lyman's article. But I thought of something this morning. You'll tell me if I'm crazy. This morning, you know, that's what I think about on Friday mornings in the Chazar Shatz. I think about what I can, you know, coming up for my shir. So I came up with some, I think it's a little bit a stretch, but I want to link the death of Ezra, suppose the death of Ezra, to the translation of the Torah. And maybe this is going too far, but even if not, you learn something. Who's learning, talking about Daf Yomi, who's learning Daf Yomi? You don't have to put up your hand, but this was, I think, I'm not doing Daf Yomi this cycle, but I think it was three, 4 days ago. Where are we today? Sanhedrin Kavav? I don't know. We're around there. Sanhedrin 26. 20, I don't even know the exact up today. So this, we're going to go now to Sanhedrin 21. So this is just learned this week. This is this week's Daf Yomi. And let me just find it here. Is this blocking my thing here? Why can't I see Sanhedrin? Here we go. Okay. So this is the second parak of Sanhedrin. Talk about the rules of a king, the restriction, that's not important now. And the rules of writing a Sefer Torah. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Ra'oi haya Ezra, shenitartein Torah al yadol Yisrael. This is unbelievable. Ezra was the appropriate, it would have been appropriate, Ra'oi. The proper thing that should have happened is Ezra should have been the person who gave Torah to the Jewish people. And that's what would have happened. We just have one problem. He was born too late. Ilmele, like if you read the book Outliers, you know, if you have to be born between 1955 and 1958 to be a computer guru, Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, Michael Dell, they're all born in that window. He has this whole theory and Outliers. You have to be born in particular times in history. You're born earlier, it's too early. There weren't enough computers around to develop. You're born later, you missed it. You missed the early wave. So Ezra should have gotten the Torah, but what can you do? Moshe beat him by like 1,000 years. But Moshe, and then the Gemara proves why Torah. And of course, what's the Gemara saying? Ezra brought Torah to the Jewish people. Moshe brought Torah to the Jewish people as they entered the land of Israel for the first time. Moshe prepared them, Sefer Dvarim, the old Torah, to prepare them to set up the society in Israel. They were exiled. Who was the one who reestablished Torah? The Jews were intermarried, assimilated. We've discussed on other occasions. Ezra brought them back to, and he restored Torah. to the Jewish people. So he was a Moshe Rabbeinu. That's really what they're saying. He did the same thing that, that Moshe did. But so they quote all these verses. So then the Gemara says, "Vafal pi shelo nitnat Torah yito." Okay, he couldn't write the Torah. Obviously we needed earlier. Moshe got it. Nishtane al yito haktav. This is a beautiful idea that the Gemara is going to debate. The font of the Torah changed. If we would find Moshe Rabbeinu's Torah, nobody could read it. It'd be in hieroglyphics. We call it Ktav Ivri. There's some fancy English word for Ktav Ivri. I forget what it is. Somebody can remind me. We have Ktav Ashurit, Assyrian Ktav. We have non-Jewish lettering that they got when they went into exile, the Assyrian lettering. So he's not going to give us the new Torah, but it's going to look different. So it's like a new Torah because it's totally new and improved, if I can use such an expression. A beautiful font, Ktav Ashurit, as from Ktav Ivrit. So that was his way of kind of getting a new Torah. It's an amazing Gemara. It's an amazing Gemara. So the Gemara has a whole discussion about this, right? Why is it called Ashurit, Ktav Ashurit? Because it came from Assyria when they went back. And then, perhaps, Ezra's, what the Gemara is saying is there's one thing to change the font of the Torah. That's okay. That's good. But to translate the Torah, in other words, it's sort of one step. First you change the font. I don't know. Maybe this is like, it's crazy, but first you change the font. That's okay. But if you translate the Torah, that's a terrible thing. Maybe there's some link. There's changes both with Ezra. The Torah looks differently, but it's the same Torah. So that's okay. But then when the Greeks made us the Mamish translate the Torah, that's already bad. So I don't know. But anyways, that's what we have in the Stichus. And that's right. On Shiva, you know, we have the Mishnah says five things happened on Shiva Sarva Tammuz. Five things happened on Tishba. So here we have three things happen, not on the Sarva Tevet, but one happened the 8th, 9th, and the 10th, but the translation toward the death of Ezra and the siege of Jerusalem, the beginning of the end, the beginning of the exile. And it is important to fast. Obviously, it's important to fast. And I'll just end with why is it important to fast in general? This is for every fast day. What the Talmud in Brachot says that Agra Detanit Staka, if I'm quoting it correctly, that the reason we fast, the reward for fasting is to get charity. That's why we fast, because when you're only, you can't really know what it's like to be hungry unless you experience hunger. So you're going to fast for 11 hours today, you know, how much hunger do you experience? But still, you experience a little bit. Yom Kippur, you know, that already experience a little bit more. So that's what the Talmud says. The goal of Yom Kippur is not Yom Kippur. The goal of every fast day is to give charity. Rashi just says very simply, whatever money you save on food, you can donate to charity. But I think it means much more than that. In the Middle Ages, maybe that was more of an appropriate explanation. But I think it really means is, of course, that you're motivated. You realize that other people are, how blessed we are and how much poverty there is in the world. One in seven people in Toronto, including Jews, no different Jewish community, live below the poverty line. And I don't know, we just don't generally hang out with those type of people. I don't know what the numbers are in the United States. In Israel, it's horrendous. I don't know what percent, it's horrendous, the poverty level. Israel is one of the worst countries in the world for the gap between the wealthy and the poor. You have a lot of wealth and a lot of poverty. And of course, in Israel, much of the poverty is self-inflicted. I'm not going to get into all the politics, but we know they choose to be impoverished because they don't want to get an education. Okay. But they're still in the poverty line. It's still very sad. Anyways, okay. Enough of this. Any quick questions? Should I take a very quick look? Rain is absolutely insane. How does it calculate it in the North Pole? Okay. We can discuss after the shiur. In the Haredi community, a significant portion of women are pregnant or nursing. Ah, that's why they don't fast. That's a great explanation. Ah, you know, it's why, you know what what was I going to say? Oh, you know why I heard explanation. You know, right. How many candles does everybody light here on Friday night? Two or one for each child? I mean, you don't have to tell me, don't, but right. Some people like two and some people like for every child, right? Half and half. I don't know. Like my mother lit five candles because three kids. My wife lights two candles because that's what her mother did, right? Different different, you know, customs. So I heard an explanation. Why do you light an extra candle for kids? It's a nice thing, but what is kids and candles? What does it have to do with candles on Friday night? Right? There's a mitzvah to light really one candle. And the minag, we do too, zachor v'shamor. But the real halacha is to have light. You need light in the house. That's why we light candles. Question that we discussed with electricity, etc. So I heard the explanation is new. There's this very funny halacha that if a woman misses lighting, right, you've all heard this, then she should light an extra candle, a sort of a punishment. The rest of her life, just say. So I heard new woman went to have childbirth. They couldn't light candles on Friday night because they were in the hospital. So they had to light an extra candle. But it wasn't because the kid was born. It's because they missed lighting candles on Friday night. Nunu. I think, by the way, this halacha doesn't apply anymore unless you spend Shabbos in the dark. But if you turn on your electricity, so that's considered lighting. I'm not recommending, we've discussed this, I think, right? I'm not recommending you don't light candles, but strictly speaking, that's why Rav Schachter, as I'm sure many people know, is machmir. He doesn't allow you to light candles on the second night of Yontif. All the women yell and scream at him, nobody listens to him, but because they can't take it. And most rabbis don't agree either, but Rav Schachter Paskins that it's forbidden to light candles the second night of Yontif. The chandelier is burning. The light serves no purpose second night of Yontif. So I'm sure most people here light candles on the second night, but those who are students of Rav Schachter know that's one of his, you know, his famous things that, you know, people have their own quirks. But he also says on Friday night, you shouldn't make a bracha if the chandelier is on. You should turn off the lights, the chandelier, and light candles on candles and the chandelier. Because if the light is on, you don't need candles. You're really yotzei. So you want to light candles, that's okay. But don't make a bracha on them unless it's already dark. So again, I don't think people follow that. But that's what Rav Schachter says. So I think you can rely on that. If you have a baby, today you can light, they have all these ways to light candles, and they have the Tzomet has the electric candles on battery, and you've all seen them, I hope, right? When you travel, they're great. They have Heksherim, you know, of all the rabbis, whatever. They invent, you know, they have these two candles you can light, but it's battery powered. But before that, so you can rely on the lights, you don't have to light again. Anyways, so that's interesting. In the Haredi communities, women are pregnant, so that's why the minhag will not start. Okay, I don't know. The Hasidim allow their women to eat. In Yeshivish communities, most girls, okay. Thank you. Chatham Sofer says our Tavid Siege started, sat in judgment. Right. That happens every year. I just don't know. I don't know that source, but it could very well be. Russian var translated into 70 languages. So that's very interesting. Yeah, Morris, that's a very good question. Be'er et ha-sefer Torah. So the Torah itself says you should translate it. So why were they upset when it got translated into Greek? That's a very good question. I don't know. I have to think about that a little more.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
I once asked that question also. I think good. Because the purpose was in order to disseminate it for nefarious reasons, as opposed to when Moshe was doing it, when Rashi writes, you know, Bishvim, yeah. It was.
Right. Is there any evidence for that? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I hear what you're saying. The Greeks' motivation was different.
Right. I mean, if the king is.
I don't know.
Demanding it, he's not doing it in order that each of the Jews should be able to understand that he wants to disseminate it among the Greek populace.
It could be kind of like what I said, that you know, some things are bad, but we have to do it. Like Eishet Yifat Torah, there are mitzvot in the Torah doesn't like, but the Torah is realistic and the Torah allows certain things. So maybe, although I agree, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like Be'eret HaTorah Zot, the Moshe writing in seven languages, is actually something very positive. But you could say it's necessary, but it's not ideal. I mean, everybody understands you should learn Torah in Hebrew. And with Rashi, you know, especially we say the Torah, every word, every letter, every structure, syntax is so important. You can't get any of that in a translation. So I don't know. I don't know. It's
and who says that that's the pshat?
Who says that Be'eret HaTorah is the pshat? I think Rashi there quotes it.
Yeah,
I think Rashi there says. Right, Morris?
Yeah, it's not just that. I mean, so the other nations will understand the Torah. I mean, it's not just for Jewish people.
I know, but we're going in to destroy them. I never understood that would be the pshat. But
if we don't destroy 70 nations, we're destroying the seven nations who live in Canaan. I mean, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting question, right? And I mentioned in the past, I think Rav Menashe Klein, if I'm not mistaken, the Mishnah Halacha, the posek who lived in Boer Park, and he has a Toronto connection, but that's another story. He was with Elie Wiesel in Auschwitz, and they were from in Siget together, and they were raised in Siget. He was quite a Haredi posek, but I'm pretty sure he has a very sharp attack when Art School translated. I think it was him translating to English. There were, when it started, people said, this is a terrible thing. I've said it, and I still say it, the Mishnah Berurah should not be translated to English. If you can't read the Mishnah Berurah in the Hebrew, it's not for you. Learn something else, please. What do I have to learn the Mishnah Berurah for, like in English? So I actually think some of these translations are bad. So where do you draw the line? Like, so there were people, listen, historically, very few people studied Talmud. Never, ever in Jewish history, the more than 5% of Jews at any given time opened a Talmud. Never happened. Never. Except in post-World War II. The Gemara was for the elite of the elite. In Europe before the war, like how many people opened up a Gemara? What did they have? Shirim and Yaakov to Hillel? Nobody learned Gemara. It took till 1923 till Rav Meir Shapiro introduced Daf Yomi. And how many people learned Daf Yomi in 1923? How many people heard of Daf Yomi in the 1950s? Most Jews didn't even hear of it. They didn't even know what Daf Yomi was. And it was unheard of. It's all post-World II. So that's what it thought. There are a lot of people who feel like that. We've mentioned many times that Talmud was written by rabbis for rabbis. There's no way the rabbis in the Talmud thought the average Jew would read the Talmud because they wouldn't talk the way they talk. They wouldn't insult people the way they insult people. I mean, most of the Gemara is not like that, but there's so many, there are enough in 2,711 double-sided pages, now that there's Daf Yomi, so I kind of know there's 2,711 pages, right, the way the non-Jewish printers printed the Talmud, right? The non-Jewish thing. How many pages there are in Talmud? Daniel Bomberg. Anyways, doesn't matter. So there's so many things that are really like lawyers talk to lawyers. It's almost inappropriate to talk that way. So there's no way they thought the average person would read it. So that's it. People said, if you can't study Talmud in the original, don't study Talmud. So I think the consensus is that's not true. It's a wonderful thing. Hundreds of thousands of people are studying Talmud, the most important text we have. It's beautiful. You know, I don't know how much, but you can understand why when it started. And I think history, as Rav Soloveitchik says, by Yosef and the brothers, they had a big fight and they had an argument and history puskened. That's the Rav Soloveitchik says. That's what he says on Zionism. That's his whole thing on Zionism. Before the war, he was an anti-Zionist. Remember in the Aguda, all this history puskened that you have to be a Zionist. Sometimes on these major questions, history will determine who's right. So history has determined that the translation of Talmud English has been a wonderful thing. But there were many people against it. And I'm still, like I said, against Mishnah Berurah. All these things, don't translate the Mishnah Berurah into English. Like, I don't understand. But obviously, people are going to disagree with me. Okay, let's go to Vilna Mashinim, at least a few minutes on Vilna Mashinim. Okay, what are we talking last week? So we talked about Shmuel HaKatan. Just let me say one other thing. We asked why he's called Shmuel HaKatan last week. So I think last week people said because he was humble, right? He was humble. So I think somebody said he wasn't as great. I think somebody mentioned, I forget, was great. So I actually looked, Rav Soloveitchik had four possible explanations. One of them is compared to Shmuel HaNavi. He is a Katan. You know, there's Shmuel HaNavi and then there's me. So I'm Shmuel HaKatan. You know, that's sort of, I think that's kind of cute. In other words, but that relates to being humble, of course. One explanation, I find this like almost funny. He was short. You know, so they called him Shmuel. I got Rav Soloveitchik mentioned that. So in one of his talks, but the explanation I think he focuses on more, he was like a child. Shmuel HaKatan, he was a child. And we know the Rav has a beautiful, beautiful essay. It's one of my most, when I wrote it once in Advar Torah, it's one of the Divrei Torah I got the most comments on ever, on Sarah. The Rav talks about how only a child can pray and only a child can come close to God. Adults are too sophisticated. We're too smart. We've lost our sincerity, we're spoiled. We live in the world. We are corrupted, every adult. Only a child, Rav Soloveitchik, of course, contrasts that. Only an adult can learn. You need sophistication.
We've lost our innocence.
I'm sorry?
We've lost our innocence.
Yes, we've lost our innocence. All of us have. It's inevitable. That's what it means to grow up. So that Daddy says the greatness of sorry. This is this, you know, when sorry was a 7 and 20 and 100, that's the Rav's interpretation that while she was an adult, she maintained her innocence and beauty and sincerity of youth. And while she was young, she had the maturity of an adult. That's the greatness of Sara. Mea Shana, Esrim Shana, Shavar Shana. Such a beautiful drasha. You have to listen to it. You got to go on while you talk. I heard it on a cassette. There may be, I mean, we don't have so many young people here, but there are people, probably my students don't know what a cassette is, you know, but I heard it in those olden days when you went in the car and you put in, you know, that two holes in it and whatever. So I imagine now it's on YU Tour somewhere. You have to listen to it. Talks about Peter Pan and the same talk. It's just unbelievable. But so that's the Rav. Shmuel HaKat, he was a child, innocent. Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that Rav also gave a beautiful hesped for Rav Heller.
That's here on my notes. If we're not going to get there today because I spent too much time on Asar B'Teva, right. We're going to get get there, please.
Pleitas Sofrehim.
Exactly. The next bracha, Pleitas Sofrehim. The Rav's beautiful eulogy for Rav Chaim Heller. Okay, thank you very much. Let's leave that till next week. But the Rav was the greatest maspid ever. His hespedim are famous. They're beautiful. The hesped for the Talmud Rebbetzin, where he talks about the role of the mother and the father. They're beautiful hespedim. And when the Rav died, Norman Lamb, who was a fantastic maspid, one of the greatest darshanim of the 20th century, Norman Lamb. How many of you have heard Norman Lamb, you know, speak live? And a lot of people. He's a fantastic darshan, as you all know. And so Norman Lamb said that the only person who could give a hesped for the Rav is the Rav. There's nobody qualified to, like the Rav, just beautiful hespedim. He had his ability to say, you know, what they are, this famous hesped for his uncle. That's the Das Torah hesped for Rav Elville. That's when the Rav was still in a goodist. The Kohen Gadol, the breastplate and the heart and the mind. Just amazing hespedim the Rav gave. So he has a famous hesped on Rav Chaim Heller. We can talk about next week on Pleitas Sofrehim. So that's one thing. Just the Shmuel HaKatan, the innocence of a child, the beauty of a child. There's something we all know very, very beautiful about that idea. Let me point out, since we're doing articles, so we spoke last week about the problem, Israel HaMalshinim attacking evildoers or evil. So we said, even though Bruria's comment, Yitamu Chataim, that we should sins should be eradicated, not sinners, we showed how that's not the simple pshat. This pshat is, we're praying for sinners. They're very nice what Breuer says, but, and I point out fascinatingly how all the Sidurim, Koran, Art Scroll, RCA Siddur, all translate in the Barchi Nafshi, Yitamu Chataim, as not a sin should be gone, sinners. It's because that's the pshat. Breuer is very nice. That's how, you know, before Levecha, it's very nice we should do that. And but we said Rav Meir's living in the world. Rav Meir was that the world death is good. All kinds of Rav Meir was otherworldly, and there is, and that's is the tension. At what point do we pray for the destruction of evildoers and just for evil? And like I said, like everything, like how long do you fast on Asar B'Teva? There's a tension. There are two sides, and it's not an easily resolvable tension. There is a point where I point to the pasuk, Bavod Rishayim Rina, when the evil is eradicated, there is joy. What about Bimfole Bechal Tismach? You're right. So you have to balance it. So I'll just point out, for those who want to see, I don't know, I'll just show you the article. I skimmed it last night. I read it a long time ago. This is the article by Basil Herring. Where is the article? Where am I going here? Yeah. Should Jews rejoice when their enemy falls? So Rabbi Basil Herring, for a while, was the executive director of the RCA, the Room of Council America. So grew up in South Africa, like many very well accomplished people. And Rabbi in Atlanta Beach. So this is just an interesting article published in tradition, I don't know, 20 years ago. And his last statement is, he goes through the contradiction. Why do we spill the wine on Pesach? Why do we say half Hallel, etc.? And then at the end, It's interesting, actually. I express my thanks to Dr. Norman Lamb, Rabbi Herschel Schechter, Professor Schneer Lyman. I mentioned for Shalom Karim for their particular insightful suggestion. Okay, it's just interesting. Okay, to conclude then, should Jews exalt when God finally punishes his and their enemy, right? The enemy of God. The enemy of Jewish people, the enemy of God. The answer one can reasonably conclude, following a long and venerable list of precedents, starting with Moshe Rabbeinu, is yes. As long as that sentiment emanates from a sense of renewed and invigorated faith in the providential powers of God of our forefathers. He who rewards the righteous and punishes the wicked, each according to their just deserts. So you see, it's not so simple. It's very nice and progressive, whatever word you want to use, to say we never want our sin or evil to be people to be hurt. You know, when a terrorist gets killed, maybe we should be happy. Maybe we should. It's hard. It's hard to know. On the other hand, we do pray they should repent. This is like many things unresolvable and depends on the situation. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's a difference here between non-Jews and Jews. I'm just wondering, is there a difference?
I would say even the opposite. If you look in the Talmud, boy, oh boy, the Talmud doesn't like Jewish sinners. We are much more tolerant, as we should be, and liberal, as the Poskim said we should be. Right? I've said many times, right? I quoted it last Shabbos. I was at Tovas at my sister's, so I gave the Shir in her shul last week. I quoted the tshuva of the Binyan Sion a little bit, 1861, that Mechalalei Shabbos of today, especially those who drive to shul, so concern, he drives to shul on Shabbos. The Talmud says a Mechalal Shabbos is like an atheist. He can't count towards a minion. Nothing. You want nothing to do with the awful things the Gemara says about sinners. But we know today it's very different. People sin for totally different reasons. We're living in a different environment. Yeah, if you live in a certain environment and sinning, you're breaking norm today. And I said the same thing, intermarriage. We don't sit Shiva. It would be a terrible thing to sit Shiva. Somebody intermarried. This is the worst thing in the world you could do today. But maybe if you live in Satmar, I don't know. But we're normal people. People intermarry. They go to college. They fall in love. They're not rejecting Jews. They're not religious, whatever it is. So we have a totally different attitude. I told you, Mark Shapiro said that somebody asked the Sridi Ace, Rav Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg, his son is intermarrying. What should he do? He said, go to the wedding. That's what he said you should do. He didn't put it. That's pretty amazing. I don't know that I could say such a thing. But who knows? But make your own son. You go to the wedding. You don't want to cut them off. So attitudes change. So when the Gemara has things about praying for the wicked, here, let me show you. Let's look in that. It's getting late, but we still have a few minutes. Let me show you what the Rambam says. And the Rambam's talking about Jews. If I can, the Rambam. Hilchot Tshuva. That's true. Ben Adam does employ non-Jews also. Okay, but the Rambam talks about here, we should go a little further. Anyway, now this is for sure talking about Jews. Somebody who's sorry for the mitzvot he did. We're clearly, this is now we're talking on Jews. Then he says, Afalpi talks about shofar. And then the Rambam starts talking about sinners, Avi Korsim. Everybody has a share in the world to come, even non-Jews. And here are the people who don't have shares in the meaning, Avi Korsim, Kofrim, Mitor, these are all Jews. Kofrim, Mitor, the Meitim, Vira, Goel, Machti, Rabbi, and Porshim, Mitor, Kasibra. And that's where the Rambam says, even if you believe God has a physical form, you lose your share in the world to come. But, and the Rambam, they're terrible things. You don't save his life on Shabbos. If he falls into a pit, you let him die there. We throw him into the pit. All kinds of awful attitudes, awful for our generation. It's that's why if you just study Talmud Daf Yomi in translation with no context and no Rebbe teaching you, can be very scary because you can get these misimpressions. In the time of the Talmud, you lived in a community where every single person is Shomer Shabbos, and you go out and you're going to demonstrate, I don't believe in God. I'm not Shomer Shabbos. Today, belief in God and Shomer Shabbos have nothing to do with each other. You can believe in God and eat on Yom Kippur. Whatever, it's not connected. In the time of the Gemara, only Jews who didn't believe in God would be a Mechal Shabbos because we follow Shabbos because we believe God created the world. But people today don't have that association. So therefore, the Poskim have to write updated Tshuva that these Gemaras don't apply today. It's not the, that's the way halacha works. That's why we need, hashofet asher yeh bayamim ahem in every generation. So to say that the attitude against sinners is for non-Jews, no. I would say it's more for Jews than for non-Jews. But yes, we today, I don't know where to draw the line, right? And maybe with Jews, we have to be much more lenient. I don't know. And of course, when I say evil, see, today I would say nothing in the ritual world is evil. In the Talmud, a Jew who ate treif publicly, whatever, that's evil. I would just consider that non-observant. Evil is defined in the moral sphere. Killers, bank robbers, rapists, child molesters, that's evil. So what do you do with them? You know, that, it's not evil. A person who eats on your kippur is not an evil person, God forbid. Maybe at one time people considered him evil, not today. That's the famous tshuva of the Chazon Ish. Nobody's going to say the Chazon Ish was a modern Orthodox rabbi. The Chazon Ish writes today, he writes this in Yoredeya, if you want to look it up, in Siman Beit, I believe. I can look it up later. The Chazon Ish writes that a Jew today who grows up in a yeshiva, an Orthodox home, and leaves the, you know, whatever you want to call it, becomes non-observant, none of these laws apply even to him. Because people say, okay, the person that grows up non-religious, what does he know? But the person that goes to yeshiva, he knows better. Because he said, no. Our society is a secular society. And our society, no, even if you grow up in a religious environment, we don't throw the book at you if you leave it. We should reach out to you. And that's what the Rambam also writes. He writes about the children of the Karaites. You have to be warm to them. So again, these are questions and different people have different attitudes, you know, how becoming. Yes, Morris, what do you want to ask?
Rabbi Schachter once spoke at in Toronto and he said,
yes, I was there.
He would consider somebody to be Mechalel Shabbos Befer Hesya if you walk down the streets of Bnei Brak wearing your shtreimel and smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, that might be. I they're going to say the other time when Rav Schachter spoke in Toronto, and Rav Schachter said publicly in Toronto at Bnei Torah congregation, for those who were there, that the people you should invite to your Pesach Seder first and foremost are your intermarried relatives. That's what he said. You don't need to invite your from brother-in-law to come to your Pesach. I mean, it's nice if you like your from brother-in-law, but invite your aunt who's married to a non-Jew. Maybe you'll be Makari then, maybe they'll get the kids, maybe they'll convert. And if the mother's Jewish, even if the father doesn't convert, maybe they'll send the kids to a Jewish day school. That's what he said in public. I don't know if he said in public, but I heard him saying Shir. Let's say your cousin, your first cousin, your whoever gets married in Sfiras Omer, in the middle of the Omer. You know, we have a minag. It's a minag not to get married in the Omer. So Rav Schachter says, you're not really, absolutely, you go to the wedding.
Oh, is it almost done?
You should go to the wedding. And then he said, it's much because it says we don't punish. In the Shulchan Aruch, there's a minhag not to make wedding, but someone makes a wedding. It's not the end of the world to make a wedding in Sfira. It's not so bad. And so we don't punish him. He says, what? It's a greater punishment. Don't go. And then he said, you don't have to go to your religious cousin's wedding with 500 people, but your non-religious cousin, you got to go to his wedding because he's going to say, oh, though he's religious, he won't have anything to do with it. And you got to show I'm religious. I care more about my non-religious. This is Rav Hershel Schachter, also not like a liberal, in many areas, but this is the world we live in. And I remember Rav Schachter telling us in Shir, I don't remember the exact quote, but I more or less remember the exact quote. He said, again, I don't want to, when he wasn't, you know, wasn't at a public lecture, but he said, we should be very thankful how the reform movement is so much more traditional today than it once was. The early reformers, some of them had Shabbos on Sunday. And so it's, today, the reform movement, you have reform rabbis who keep kosher. I mean, it's a totally different world. You have reform day schools. Reformers adamantly opposed to day schools. It's not where we want it to be, but, so it's a totally different world. And that's why halacha is always a shofet asher yeh bayamim haheim. You always have to go to the person that day. Don't tell me, even that's the problem. Even quoting Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's very nice. They can guide us, but for practical decision making, you go to a rabbi who's alive. And that used to be why the Mar D'Achyu, not only rabbis, a rabbi who lives in the community, not on the internet, not who lives in Israel and you live here or vice versa. Got to be a rabbi who knows you because halacha is an art and a science, and the science is one thing, but the art is, you know, every person is different. Okay, let's quickly do a quick review. It's getting, you know, I'd say you have to go to lunch soon, but you don't have to. But okay, so we spent a fair bit of time talking about Asar B'Tevet, how it's only a minhag, and what the difference between a minhag and rabbinic law, when a day ends, a fast day should end, and the Mishnah is saying, even though we may not follow that view, that even on Tisha B'Av was on a Friday, you end at, before sunset, you would end. And, we discussed the three things that happened on Asar B'Tevet, the famous one, the siege of Jerusalem. It's the main reason. Then the idea of the translation of Torah, is that good or bad? Of course, it's both. And perhaps the death of Ezra. Ezra was the second Moshe Rabbeinu. He did many of the things Moshe Rabbeinu did. And as a reward, so to speak, he couldn't give the Torah because Moshe beat him to it. But we can change the font of the Torah. It's such a powerful, amazing Gemara. The Gemara then back and forth, but that's not our point for now. And then we discussed just a little bit Shmuel Hakatan being a child, and we spent, we'll pick up next week, finish up. Our relationship to evil is a very complicated relationship. And evil and sinners are not the same thing. It used to be equated, evil and sinners. That's, I guess, what we're saying. Today, you can't equate somebody who doesn't follow the Torah as evil. And that there was a time that was, because that was how society understood it. But we live in a different time, and we distinguish between mitzvot, between man and man and God, depends what society. And I agree, Morris, yeah, if you're walking Bnei Brak with a shtreimel smoking a cigar, you're asking for it, and you should get it. But that's not what, that's is lahachit. That's really what we're talking about. Okay, just a reminder, you know, this Sunday, you should get emails about it. But for the course, if you're not signed up, we're going to change our login. We're going to officially move what we call our winter session. This week, we're going to be starting two new sessions, Zev Elif on Wednesdays and Adventures in American History, always fascinating stuff, and Shuli Mishkin on Thursday. Then I think next week, we're going to start another. We have a few new series coming up and then are continuing. But it's all going to be on a different login. Just look for the email. Okay, just let me take a quick look. Any questions, right? To ask on the North Pole. So I had a fast time. Who would go to the North Pole for a Asar B'Tevet? Got to be out of your mind. Maybe Tisha B'Av, you want to go to the North Pole. But that's a fascinating question. Halakha. Of course, there's no agreed upon solution. By the way, this is a problem. It's the same issue when you go on an Arctic cruise and you go above the Arctic Circle. It's not so simple. There are a lot of questions that arise when Ishevitz, we go on an Arctic cruise in June and for a whole week the sun doesn't set. So that's a question. You go by where you came from, the nearest community. Asar B'Tevet, I assume it's only a minute could come. I don't know exactly, but there are different views on what you do when you're in these places. What do you do if you're on the moon? That's not a joke. Rabbi Bleich has an article, Mitzvot on the Moon. I mean, we laugh, but it's not so funny. If I don't want to talk about Elon Musk, but, you know, if he gets, I don't know, maybe he'll transport people. Maybe he should go live on the moon. I don't know. But, anyways, we'll see. Okay. And Haredi, women are pregnant. It's called Yom HaKadosh HaKlali. Yes, thank you. Got himself a fine Roi. Ezra was, Raui was qualified enough. Yeah. But Roi means more than qualified, means appropriate. It would have been appropriate for Ezra to give the Torah. Raui haya. I don't think it means he was qualified. I think it means proper, but okay. And okay. Russian Varmyak, Tav Ivri, Old Hebrew. That's why Art School was very careful to speak Haskam from Poskim. Okay. Yeah, they did get Haskamas, but not everybody agreed. Yeah. Haskamas today, by the way, are very different. It's just another change. Haskama used to be a copyright. In the original Haskamas were all copyrights. It was very expensive when printing started. Very expensive. Somebody spent thousands of dollars to print from. There's some of the big controversies. They had on the Rambam, the writing, and they would print it, and somebody else would then take the whatever plates and print it for much cheaper and undercut it. The first guy would lose, so people want to go print. So the original Haskamas were a cherem. They would excommunicate. They would give the author 25, like we have in America, 17 years. Copyright or whatever the rules are. So they give somebody, nobody had the right on generic drugs. It's the same type of thing. You have to wait a lot of time before you can allow a generic drug. Because otherwise drug companies won't do any research because they can't make money. So you have to allow them to make a profit. So that was the original Haskamot. And that was economic and nothing to do with, I'd like it to wrap, it's a good book. Today, Haskamas, of course, are very different. They're attesting that the author is a nice fellow. generally. Okay, Hakatan is the same. What is the same? Last name is Klein. Oh, yeah, it's the common name Klein. Correct. Shot like me. Okay, yeah, it could be. Okay, unhappily, somebody writing to me privately, many Jews are not simply religious. Yeah, are anti-religious. That's a different story. But the question is, why are they anti-religious? I also don't consider many anti-religious people. I'm telling you, I don't want to say things, but we'll turn off our recording. But I don't know, if I lived in Israel, I might be, I don't mean this like literally or seriously, but I could become anti-religious too if I lived in Israel. If you see how the members of Knesset act, who purport to be religious, I don't have to go any further than that. Of course you become irreligious. Why? Of course you become, or I don't know, I want to get into the army issues. I'm not one to talk, but many of the anti-religious, they're not anti-religious necessary. They're anti-religious because we give them reason. That's how we should look at it. Don't blame. See, it's always easy to blame the other person. And maybe they're at fault too a little bit, but look at what are we doing to show the beauty of Yiddishkeit? And you know what Rav Soloveitchik said? It's never going to be in Kashrut or Shabbos. Nobody's going to be impressed to want to be more religious because you're machmir on Erevin or on Glatt Kosher. Rav Soloveitchik says you want to get somebody to be religious, business ethics. So let the non-religious Jew see, when I do business with an observant Jew, wow, the integrity is unbelievable. Tell me, are we there yet? Right? I don't have to tell you the reputation, wanted or not, or deserved or not. I don't think there's any, I don't think anybody says, oh, he wears a kippah, I can trust him more in business. Rav Soloveitchik says, until that happens, we're not going to be able to convince the masses to be more religious. When people will see, that's the Gemara in Yuma, it's not Rav Soloveitchik. We've quoted the Gemara many times. A person who is not honest in business, but wears a kippah, is a chilul Hashem. That's where, because you turn people off of religion. So it's obvious. So, so I think the anti-religious, and yes, they may be Zionistic, right? That's it. I told you, I heard Mesh Terrigan. I hope his son, I think, is doing better. His son was injured quite seriously, I think, in Lebanon, Mesh Terrigan, the Rebbe in Gush. So I heard him in Toronto a number of years ago. I think I mentioned it once before. He said God in his infinite wisdom created the Zionist movement, non-religious. It kept a connection to Yiddishkeit. For hundreds of thousands of Jews without Zionism, they wouldn't have a connection to Yiddishkeit. And I that's very true. And many of them, Israel is much more religious than it was years ago. That was their connection to Yiddishkeit. I would say the same thing. He didn't say it, but I would say it's the same thing about the conservative reform movement. In other words, that's why a lot of the religious Jews have a positive view towards Zionism. It's a connection to Yiddishkeit. So it's reform and conservative. A lot of these same people have a very negative attitude towards reform Judaism. Why do you have a more positive attitude towards a Zionistic Jew who's not religious than a Reformed Jew? I don't understand. But okay, that's me. All right, I think that's it. Okay, any other comments, questions? Want to throw stones at me? Luckily, it's hard on a computer. They haven't invented a way yet in a computer to throw stones at somebody.
It's good to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Listen, I everybody should speak what they want. Feel free to disagree. I'm just thinking. It's what I think, and I think, whatever. I try to, got to be intellectually honest. And but listen, it's no, people don't like to talk about a lot of things often. But listen, the religious community has to self-serve. I don't want to criticize the yeshiva, the Haredi community. I want to criticize the modern Orthodox community, because this is my community. We have a lot of things to criticize in our community. It's easy to criticize the other. But so we have to look. So even what I said, well, maybe it wasn't so nice. But when I talk about Knesset members, I'm just not referring to people who are Haredi. I'm talking about people who identify as religious Zionists. Let's look how they act in the Knesset. No different. I'm not mean to, we always have to look inwards to see why, when someone's not religious, what are we doing? What can we do? And, try to, but anyways. Okay. Thank you very much. And we look forward to learning with you. Rabbi Liebtag, I've got the new login, the winter login on Sunday. And like I say, please invite one friend. That's the admission price, to invite somebody to come to one of our classes. Okay. Shabbat shalom, everybody. And be well. Shabbat shalom. And good things. Sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. You said many important things. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Somebody wrote a link to Rav's talk on Chayesara. Oh, very good. I see Yocheva put the link for the Rav's talk on Chayesara. It's well worth listening to. I didn't see that before. Okay. All right. Be well, everybody.
Shabbat shalom.